I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Father John Deere. He's an author, peace activist, lecturer. He's with the Diocese of Monterey, California. He lives here in New Mexico. And Paul Schmidt, founder of New Mexicans for Gun Safety. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Mary Charlotte.
So there is an event coming up called Remembering December 14th at El Museo Cultural. It's happening on December 14th from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. And, of course, December 14th is the day of that horrible, horrible massacre in Sandy Hook, Connecticut.
That's right, yes.
So what's this event all about?
Well, what this event is all about for us is honoring the people that were affected by that horrible tragedy in Sandy Hook 2 years ago, and honoring all the people that have been affected by gun violence throughout our country being one of the worst, being the worst country in the world, in the developed world, for gun violence.
Is that right?
Yes. Believe it or not, since Sandy Hook, which was 2 years ago, there have been 60,000 people killed by guns in our country. 60,000.
Now, there's been so much in the news about police shooting unarmed civilians with guns. Do those count in those numbers?
Yes, they do count in those numbers also. But, you know, in the year 2007, there were more children killed by guns than by police officers in the line of duty. So, you know, looking at it from a different perspective, there are just many, many, many. I think every year, I mean every day, 8 youths between the ages of 1 and 19 are killed by guns every day in
every
this country.
Every day in this country.
Yeah.
Now, what's going on? What are some of the stories? Like, are we talking about accidents? Are we talking about suicides?
We're talking about accidents, we're talking about suicides, and we're talking about homicides also. I think in rural America, there are as many deaths due to guns as there is in urban America. And in rural America, it's mostly suicides and accidents. Where in urban America, it's mostly homicides.
Very interesting. What does New Mexico look like within the greater picture of the United States?
Well, you know, New Mexico is a rural state, so we have a lot of gun accidents and a lot of suicides. I'm sure that you have friends that have committed suicide. I know I have, and everyone else that's listening to this program probably has too. But you know, even last year, I think it was in January last year in Roswell, there was a 12-year-old boy went into a school and opened fire on his classmates there, injuring people with guns. So,
to what extent, I mean, there's one, then another, and it becomes like almost like a choice that kids think they have, or what's going on?
Well, I think that's the question that we are asking in the Mexicans for Gun Safety is what's going on. And what the one thing that we know is going on is there's a very easy accessibility to guns. So the fact that a child can go into his parents' closet, can go into a gun closet that's unlocked and pick up a gun and say, hey, I could use this because I'm really frustrated about something, and then has the comfort level to be able to just go ahead and open fire. I mean, you know, even Sandy Hook, Adam Lanza, the 20-year-old that did the violence there, he had been brought up in a house of guns where he was actually, his mother, who was his first victim, actually you should take him to a shooting range on a regular basis and show him how to use guns. So he was very comfortable with guns. And you know, guns are a part of our culture. The problem with guns in our culture is that as a culture, we don't respect them.
Well, there was a sort of meme going around for a while that said, if they can give us driving license tests, why can't they do a similar thing for guns? I mean, you need a license to carry one.
Yes, I think that that's a very good suggestion. There is a very passionate segment of our society that believe that guns should be given to anyone, and anyone has the right to have a gun, and that right, of course, is justified by the Second Amendment. to have guns.
Right, but the right to have a car is we all have too.
Yeah, right, that's right. So, yes.
But you still need a license to drive the thing.
You need a license to drive a car, and there are suggestions for legislation, and I say suggestions, there is no legislation on the agenda, either in New Mexico or any place else, to have formal training as to how to rightfully use a gun, how to respect and use a gun. But that being said, we have family traditions throughout the country where people have grown up with guns, fathers have taught their children how to use guns, and it is something that is very sacred in their family. And this isn't just one or two families. This is a large, hundreds of thousands of families in this country live that way.
And I think there's an argument to be made that a lot of those people actually do use their guns safely and for proper purposes.
Absolutely.
So what is New Mexicans for Gun Safety working on?
Well, New Mexicans for Gun Safety, first of all, came into existence after Sandy Hook. There was a need to try and find a group of people that felt like I did, and what I was feeling was that all these shootings are going on. I mean, you look at Aurora, Colorado, what's happened 6 months earlier that year. And, since Sandy Hook, there's been 92 school shootings since 2 years since Sandy Hook. So I was looking around and trying to figure out where there was a group that people have felt the same way I did, that something's got to be done about this, and there wasn't any. So I decided that maybe there should be one. I put an advertisement in the New Mexican, and lo and behold, people started showing up and felt as though we really need to do something about this. We really need to curb this. We really need to stop this. And so what we began to do was formulate a focus where we can somehow affect gun violence in New Mexico. We're trying to keep it at a local level because this is where we live, and it's happening all over the country, but here. And the first thing that we decided to focus on was the ability for people to get guns that should not have guns. So we decided to look at the New Mexico legislature to see if there's anything going on there. And there was a House Bill 77 that was being proposed by Representative Miguel Garcia that would broaden background checks. And background checks are the necessary paperwork that when you go to purchase a weapon, a gun, in a gun store, you have to show that you're capable of using a gun and that you don't have a criminal record and you're mentally stable. You're able to use a gun.
Right, not capable of using it in that you know what you're doing, but
right.
That you are not a criminal.
That you're not a criminal. That's correct, yeah. Yeah, right. So that was HB 77 that year, and we decided to, as a group, as New Mexicans for Gun Safety, just beginning to spread our wings, to exercise our right to support something that we felt as though was good for this country, good for our community. We supported HB 77. That what it was going to do is expand background checks to also include gun shows. Because right now in the state of New Mexico, and actually in most places in the country, you or any criminal, not you, any criminal can go into a gun show and just go up to a gun dealer and say, hey, I want to buy that. Can I buy it? Yeah, sure, go ahead, buy it without any background check. So we wanted that's traditionally been called the gun show loophole. As far as background checks.
And so what happened?
So we got a lot of resistance. And the resistance not only came from the legislatures. There was a very loud group of individuals that were supported by gun advocate groups, such as the ones you see around the country, the national groups around the country, that said, no, if you expand these background checks, you're violating our rights to carry arms. And we didn't see that, but they had enough clout in the that first legislative session to, although we carried it all the way to the end of the session, and it almost was passed by at the end of the session, to shut it down at the very last hour of the session that year in 2013.
So are you going to try again this year?
Yes, we are. Yes.
Same idea.
Same idea. Right. Yeah. We tried last year also. Last year, the New Mexico State Legislative Session was a short session. And in a short session, you can't just bring up a bill and ask that it get voted on. You have to have it approved by the governor. And the governor did not approve the proposition of HB, what it was called then, 44.
So we're talking to Paul Schmidt of New Mexicans for Gun Safety. Another piece of the whole picture is educating people.
Yes.
What are you doing in that department?
There's a couple of things that we've been doing this year. We have been going to different events throughout northern New Mexico, such as the Española Health Fair that was just held in September of this year. And we have literature that we hand people there. We were given by the state of New Mexico gun locks, and we were passing them out to the people there at the health fair.
What's a gun lock?
A gun lock is a gun trigger lock device that you put on a gun to make sure that when it's not being out for hunting or whatever, that it's safe. So that it can't be...
So if your kids get into it.
That's right, yeah. Mostly kids, yeah. Yeah. Or even the idea is if someone stole that gun, they have a difficult time getting that lock off also.
Ah, interesting. Really?
Yeah.
What do you have a key to it or something?
Yes, you have a key.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're doing that kind of education. I mean, a lot of the I think most important work is happening with young people because they're so impressionable by both their parents and the society and the kind of violent movies they see on television. What's being done? Is there anything being done, for example, in the schools?
Yes, there is. Last October, there was a national pledge that we took part in the state of New Mexico in the Santa Fe area where we had a pledge that we brought into the schools, and the kids in the school were asked to sign the pledge, and the pledge basically said, I promise not to solve an argument with a gun. I promise never to bring a gun into the school. And then they sealed the deal by signing the pledge, and then we had some colored paint that they were able to dip their hand into the paint, and then we had this huge roll of paper up on the wall, and they were able to put their handprint on the wall. So it made it fun for them also. And we really genuinely had a good time doing it and met a lot of kids and talked to a lot of kids about gun safety that way.
Did it seem to affect the way they thought about things? Is there any way you can tell?
Well, their enthusiasm was probably one way that we can tell. There were some people that, some kids that, you know, they had it down, the different sayings. They obviously got drilled into them by the parents about guns don't kill people, people kill people, and things like that. And we were able to talk to those kids, and they were able to maybe see a different perspective, which is one thing that we were really willing to share with them, was a perspective that might show them that although it's true that people kill people, when you have a firearm in your hand and you pull a trigger, it's very fast.
Yeah, and if you punch somebody, they get a bloody nose in the same fight.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think it's if a domestic in a domestic argument, if a gun is present, a woman is 5 times more likely to be killed by an intimate partner than if there was not a gun in the room.
Right. So there is this event happening on December 14th to commemorate the Sandy Hook massacre a couple of years ago. What is going on? What are you doing? It's called Remembering December 14th.
Well, we're really excited about this. It's going to be in the afternoon of December 14th.
Which is a Sunday.
Which is a Sunday. And we're going to have, we want to bring, the idea is to bring the entire community together, as many facets of the community together at this event, to show that we are all on the same page as the fact that we want to pay homage to the victims of Sandy Hook, the victims of gun violence since and before Sandy Hook, and then we want to come together as a community to do something about this, and we want to express ourselves as a community by through song, through dance, through artwork expressions with young people expressing, and through speaking presentations.
So young people will be talking there.
Yeah, we'll have young people sharing their poetry at the event. We will have young people. We have a young man that's going to do a dramatization of, as you recall, in Santa Barbara, there was Richard Martinez, was the father of Chris Martinez, who was killed with a gun violence that happened at the University of California in Santa Barbara last summer. And he will be doing a dramatization of Richard's very passionate speech, Not One More, that he gave to after his son was killed.
There's a funny disconnect, which is that it's really hard to pass background check legislation, but everybody's in favor of background check legislation.
Right. Yeah, there is a funny disconnect there. Well, that gets into politics. And of course, the politics is the fact that there is a very, very strong gun advocate group in this country that financially backs politicians, and that backing of the politicians is so strong that they are actually afraid to take action. I think Gabby Gifford's husband talked about that, about when he was in Washington trying to pass the national legislation for background checks, which really seemed quite sensible. And one of his friends was a senator and really believed in the background checks, but voted against it. And he asked why he voted against it. And he said, "Well, my funding would dry up. I have so much support from the gun advocate groups that I wouldn't be here. And my work is so important that if I voted yes on this bill, they would pull that away from me and I wouldn't get elected."
There is a funny thing that's going on, though, because I did hear Gabby Giffords and her husband speak when they were in Santa Fe not too long ago. There was some kind of event that they were at, and this kind of, like, the power of the NRA is somewhat overstated in the sense that the politicians to whom they give money don't really have the greatest record of winning re-election.
Well, that is overstated. At least we have heard that it's overstated, but then the reality of it is that they listen to the NRA.
Well, and that's the thing that's just, I think, needs to be discussed more, and I'm going to try to get that guy on the air because they have a new book, but whether NRA support is necessary to win an election or not, the fact that elected officials think it is, I mean, it just becomes like who thinks what, as opposed to having a rational basis underneath it.
Right. Yeah. So, what is reality here?
Yeah. What is reality?
Who's speaking the truth here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So but that's difficult. That's difficult for you or I to say. The fact of the matter is that when you look at Colorado last year, and there were several things that was passed for prevention of gun violence, and the folks that were involved in passing that, a lot of them lost the election after that was over with. They had been removed from office. So
we're talking to Paul Schmidt from New Mexicans for Gun Safety. So let's talk about your role, John Deere, Father John Deere, in this event. What have you been up to?
Well, lots. Thanks for having us on, Mary Charlotte, and I just want to encourage everyone to come to this event. I think what Paul Schmidt has done and his colleagues is incredibly great service to the state of New Mexico. And I can't remember anything quite like this. That's why when I was invited to be a part of it and to be one of the speakers, I had to say yes. But I just think this is so exciting, what's happening on December 14th here in Santa Fe at El Museo. I encourage everyone to come. I want 1,000 people there, every listener, because this is so important in New Mexico and the country. And you're talking about the NRA and the power they have against our politicians. But how does change happen historically in the United States? Bottom-up grassroots movement building. And what Paul is doing here is beginning or reigniting a movement for gun safety in New Mexico. Everybody who cares should be at this event next Sunday.
It does send a signal.
It's incredible. It's very, very important, I think. Now, Is it going to be immediate change? No, but that's the way movements happen, and everybody's got to be a part of it. What we're talking about is an epidemic of violence at every level in the whole human race in the world now. It's just unprecedented. From, 70 wars, 20,000 nuclear weapons, to poverty and catastrophic climate change and all the forms of racism and sexism. But handguns, did you hear what Paul just said? 60,000 killings since Sandy Hook, 92 school shootings. So we're going to wake up and there'll be a school shooting in Santa Fe or Albuquerque one of these days? Well, everybody's got to get involved. And the thing to remember is we have more power than we realize. That's what Gandhi and Dr. King taught us. So I'll talk about, the vision of nonviolence. We all have to really become a people of nonviolence. This is what I've dedicated my life to in the terms of carrying on the call of Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi. And it's what my latest book, The Nonviolent Life, is about. And but Mary Charlotte, what I was going to say, I think, when I start is... my brother lived next door to the school in Sandy Hook.
Your brother?
My brother.
Was he there?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
yes.
He was locked down and his wife for 12 hours that day. I went there 2 weeks before the shooting on my way to Afghanistan.
Good heavens.
On a peace mission. So I spent 3 days in Sandy Hook. And as you know, Mary Charlotte, because I know you've been there too, there's nothing there except for the school and the Catholic Church. And there's a gas station and the Starbucks. And so we kind of hung out at the Starbucks. And my family is very upset that I was going to Afghanistan, as you can imagine, where I was with young people who had all their relatives killed by U.S. weapons. And I took testimony for them from the 2 weeks before. I mean, I can't even believe it as I'm saying it. I went from Sandy Hook to Afghanistan and came back. And when the shooting was happening, I just arrived. I had pneumonia from Afghanistan, but was live on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman talking about how the U.S. is killing kids in Kabul in Afghanistan, and I met dozens and dozens of survivors. But my brother was very mad that I was going over there, and I said to him, he said, you could get hurt or killed. I said, you could get hurt or killed here in Sandy Hook.
Apparently.
This was 2 weeks before, because violence is everywhere.
Oh, that was you said that before
yes,
it happened?
Yes, because happen anywhere. This is a global epidemic. We are insane. Are we addicted to violence? Addicted to guns? Addicted to bombs? Is it a false sense of security? Is it a lack of spiritual understanding or what it means to be a human being? One of the interesting things is, my family was so... convinced. I mean, they were really destroyed, my brother and his wife, because of what happened, and it's their community.
Did they have kids in the school?
No. Okay. They went to a private, they sent the kids to the private school in the next town over. It's incredible. But pretty much everybody was Catholic, so everybody knew each other in the church.
Yeah.
And my brother was saying, you don't understand, to me. I'm a longtime activist, been 35 years full-time organizing the whole country. Not doing a good job, but he's saying, you don't understand anything about organizing. Within a month, we're going to have background checks. Maybe they're even going to ban certain kinds of guns. I said, what are you, where do you live? This means the only way change will happen is movement building. And, of course, that's what's happened. That's why everybody's got to get involved. And in New Mexico, if you're listening to our interview, you should come Sunday afternoon, December 14th. It's actually a good time, Paul, on a Sunday in Advent, 2 weeks before Christmas, 1 to 4. It's very serious. But there's children involved and choirs and poetry. But one of the interesting stories for me was my brother went to see the Catholic priest, who was in all the news at the time because all funerals were happening there. And everybody loved him. He was a great guy. And, are you ready? He's selling guns on the side.
What?
The Catholic priest sold guns every week on the back of the... And if you've been to a Catholic church, there's the weekly bulletin. And on the back, I forget his name, Father so-and-so. If you're interested in buying some, he has a little gun business. So he continued this in the months after Sandy Hook. And so my brother and I put some pressure on him. And he stopped doing that. But that was a sign to me of just how normalized this is. Even after Sandy Hook, the priest loves guns. I know a lot of priests who have lots of guns, selling guns. By the way, I don't think you can be a Christian and have a gun. I think to be a Christian is to be nonviolent. Jesus' last words in the Garden of Gethsemane were, put down the sword. And then they all ran away because he's not going to defend himself with a weapon, and he was killed. And that's what it means to be a Christian. And so I'm going to talk about this life of nonviolence and what is the vision. Well, you know, guns don't work. War doesn't work. Nuclear weapons don't work. We're going deeper and deeper into this world of violence, and it's not making us happy, safer, secure. It's not protecting our kids, not protecting women. Because
and it's not protecting communities and neighborhoods.
And communities and neighborhoods, we see in Ferguson. It's an addiction. So that's why this conference is so important, because Paul is leading us to think about, you know, I would prefer to talk about the abolition of guns, but okay, safety, that's a first step. Gun safety is very important. The goal, what's the goal? We don't want one more child killed in New Mexico or in the United States. We don't want one more spouse killed in a domestic fight. I mean, domestic violence has to stop, but you don't, if you've got a gun in the house and one somebody is drinking and start yelling, we just heard Paul's statistic. So all of this, we have to deal with it. Of course, from my perspective, I see a direct connection. As a former pastor here in New Mexico, you know, there's a gun in every house, and the direct connection to the military and what we're doing in Afghanistan and Pakistan to what we're doing at Los Alamos. And none of this is working. That's why Gandhi and Martin Luther King, not to mention Jesus and Buddha, were right in calling us toward, what do you want to call it, gunlessness, nonviolence. Well, we use the words love and peace. Everybody's for love and peace, but we need boundaries now, like an addict, that you can't have weapons in your house. It's just too dangerous. And then that'll make us free to be become people of peace, love, and nonviolence. So all of that we're talking about makes such good sense. But I just want to add my two cents that we have more power than we think. This is not us against them with good people in the NRA or our neighbors or our relatives. We're saying this doesn't work. This is an epidemic. And we need to organize a movement to make these background checks happen and all the other kinds of wisdom and legislature that Paul and Representative Garcia are talking about. And to pursue this vision of a new nonviolent world, a new nonviolent New Mexico. That's what I've been talking about forever. We don't want one more child killed. We don't want people being killed in their houses. We don't want our shootings in our communities. And we don't want to be killing people, by the way, in Afghanistan and Pakistan either. It's not making us safe. I could go on and on, Mary Charlotte, but you see what you get my point.
We're talking to Father John Deere, peace activist and author of many books. And you've got some new books coming out.
Yeah.
And we'll, I hope, talk to you about them when the time comes. And Paul Schmidt, founder of New Mexicans for Gun Safety. I mean, you're bringing up a lot of issues when you talk about violence and guns and wars and weapons that go back to the origins of the history of humanity and the idea of defending yourself against the neighboring tribe is very deeply ingrained into us, both as human beings and as primates. And nonviolence, first of all, it's a funny term because you're defining yourself by a negative. You're defining yourself by what you're not. What is nonviolence? How do you understand it? What is it?
Well, you know, it's a terrible phrase, but as I said, love is used so much, and peace, everybody's for peace. Hitler was all for peace. And, you know, so what do those mean? And Gandhi stuck with this clumsy Sanskrit Hindu word, ahimsa, and then Dr. King said, well, that's right. That's the only way to understand peace and truth and love. So there's so many ways to talk about it. I think it begins with a vision of the heart that sees every human being on the planet as your very sister and brother. That's the point of every religion. We're all one. It's a human family, not just your blood sisters and brothers. The deeper you go into that, every child, a woman in Afghanistan today, a man in China, they're my sister and brother. That's the spiritual truth of reality. All 7.2 billion of us are one. The more you realize that we're all, you widen it to say, sons and daughters of a God of peace. In fact, we're one with all the creatures, all of creation and the universe. You could never hurt anybody because it's so darn beautiful and wonderful. So my definition then is active love, pursuing this truth of our common unity.
Right.
And reconciling with in love with every human being and resisting all the structures and forces of, that bring death and allowing the spirit of love to disarm our hearts. But there's one bottom line, which is at the heart of Gandhi and King. There is no cause, however noble, for which I will ever support the taking of a single human life ever again. We do not kill, and we don't kill to show that those who kill shouldn't be killing. And so in my new book, I talk about being nonviolent to yourself, nonviolent toward every human being, all your relationships, but all people, and then joining the global grassroots movements of nonviolence. And the answer to your question is that Gandhi proves that there's a methodology of responding to someone who threatens violence, whether on a personal level or a national level, and it works. There's this famous great historian, Erica Chenoweth, I'm bringing her to speak in Santa Fe next August, who has just written through Columbia University the definitive history from 1900 to 2006. She studied 350, every major conflict in the world and revolution. Where Gandhian nonviolence was tried, it worked. Case closed. And led to nonviolent democracies. There have been 85 nonviolent revolutions in the last 35 years. And that's what we're talking about here, which is building a movement through the power of nonviolence, persuasion, and dialogue to say that guns don't work, we need to have gun safety, and we want our kids to live. I, of course, am widening that to the whole world, but this is so important, what Paul and New Mexicans for Gun Safety are trying to do.
There is, you know, the typical response is, well, first of all, when you include all creatures, it's like, yeah, but if a brown recluse spider is coming up my arm, I'm going to kill it. And that extrapolates to all sorts of feelings of threat that we have. And I think differentiating between real and imagined threats is important. And I think looking at what are the choices in how to respond to, for example, Boko Haram, who's kidnapping these. I lie awake at night thinking about these Nigerian schoolgirls who are, Lord only knows what's happening to them right now. How do you respond to that? How do you respond to the Islamic State? How do you respond to these people who are beheading others? I don't know the answer.
Well, the history proves that active, organized, nationwide-based, and of course we're headed toward global nonviolent resistance is the way to respond to everything. And that, you know, having 20,000 nuclear weapons isn't protecting those kids. It's that we're just throwing our money down the drain there. No, you have to organize and train. So, but for us, we need to all be trained in nonviolence. We're going to do that at this conference here in Santa Fe next August. But eventually, every human being on the planet has to be trained in nonviolence, nonviolent conflict resolution, because we're all experts in violence. And then you put a gun in the mix, and it doesn't work. But the whole of Central Africa should be mobilizing to protect those girls and ending Ebola. But we're not doing that because we're spending trillions of dollars of war and greed and so forth and so on.
So what is nonviolent training? What is it? What does it look like?
It's very powerful. That's what Gandhi did. You just don't become Gandhi. And so when Dr. King, when he is in the civil rights movement, you see all these incredible shots of the school kids marching into Birmingham. Every kid has done a day-long training. And trainings are not talks. They're not really even workshops. You stand up and do role-playing. You divide the kids in half. Now think of the civil rights kids in Birmingham. And some of them are pretending to be the white police or a Ku Klux Klan member, and they're coming up and threatening you. And you, how are you going to respond nonviolent? You literally practice in front of people. And then all these questions arise. Dr. King's staff did that for thousands and thousands of kids. All the kids who sat in at the whites-only lunch counters had serious nonviolence training. That needs to happen for everybody in the world, but I think now we're in such bad shape that we have to train ourselves to live nonviolent lives. By the way, that was the point of the church. And every religious community should have been a nonviolence training center to live a nonviolent, peaceful life.
The Catholic Church isn't necessarily the world's greatest role model, if I may say so.
No, and all Christian churches have failed. And, you know, so we've talked about that on your show before. It's 1,700 years of the just war theory, literally throwing out the Sermon on the Mount. And the Sermon on the Mount, if just for a minute, talking about Christianity, has five antitheses. You have heard it said, but I say to you. The fifth one, before the big one, you have it said, love your countrymen, hate your enemies. I say, love your enemies. Well, that's the end of war. That's the end of the nation states. The one before that, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I say to you, go look it up, Matthew chapter 5. I say to you, offer no violent resistance to one who does evil. In the Greek, antisthene. Nobody's ever said that in human history. And no one could have made that up. That has to come from original word teachings of Jesus because it's so shocking. That's Gandhi and Dr. King. Then he gives examples. When someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn it off the other one. But what no one knows is, think about that. You imagine, I'm sitting here at the table, I'm going to strike Paul on the right cheek.
Ow.
It's not possible to. As I go to punch Paul, where is my fist landing? It's on the left cheek. So Jesus is talking about very serious, organized, nonviolent resistance, which is rooted in humiliation. Anyway, so you use the left cheek as the master slave. I could go on and on about this. The churches have completely failed, but we're all failed, every aspect of society, and we're all waking up because we're realizing violence doesn't work. One of the things I wanted to say was I was just studying, I'm always studying Gandhi and Dr. King, and I'm bringing in Dr. King for a conference next year in August. Dr. King said the greatest teacher in the world of nonviolence is Reverend James Lawson. He's my old friend. He's coming here to speak next August. He's 82. Anyway, you know, I was studying Dr. King last week, and you know, he slept with a gun under his pillow up until 1956. He was like 4 months into the Montgomery bus boycott. He's already got the attention of the whole world, and he's still scared. And he and Coretta had to do their work, and my friends at the FOR, who were now traveling down from New York to support him, were saying, hey man, you're going to call people to be nonviolent in Montgomery. You can't have a gun, nor can you have people with guns. And I didn't know this, but I just discovered it last week. He and Coretta had these private conversations, and they're like, well, what it would mean to get rid of her gun? And King said he never felt more scared and less safe than with the gun under the pillow. It didn't work.
Did he feel safer once he got rid of it?
No. Yes. Because you have to do your work. I'm not going to have a gun. Now, he's getting 15 to 20 death threats a day. And then in a few months, they blew up his house. Well, you have to do your inner nonviolence training and go, well, do you really believe in God? And King is a famous Baptist preacher. Yeah. Well, God is going to protect me. God's my safety. God's my security, number one. And then you're talking about death. You have to do all this work. I'm going to die anyway, and you make peace with your death. You accept death. He gets rid of the guns, and then he said he felt totally free till the day he died. And that makes sense. I think every one of us has to go through the Martin Luther King journey and become like Gandhi, become like Jesus, become like Dr. King did. And then you'd be part of really a movement that could become, help us all become nonviolent. And the night before he was killed, his last words, and I'll end on this, were, the choice is no longer violence or nonviolence. It's nonviolence or non-existence. We have to practice nonviolence in our personal lives, get rid of our guns, help make our communities more nonviolent, and work toward a new world of nonviolence.
We're talking to Father John Deere. Now, back to Paul Schmidt from New Mexicans for Gun Safety. You started this group a couple of years ago after the Sandy Hook incident. What led you to do that? I mean, you've put huge amounts of your life, energy, and time into this project.
Well, I think it was something that had been building up inside me for many, many years. Every time I'd pick up the paper and see something happening, some atrocity happening with a firearm, that I thought, why did that happen? Why did that have to happen? What was it that not only possessed that person to do what he did, but then it happened so quickly? And what could have happened if he didn't have that firearm in front of him and he didn't have that one moment of emotional strain where he pulled that trigger, and then his entire world changed along with everyone else around him changed also. So that's something that's bothered me for many, many, many years. And then that one day in December of 2012, when I was walking in to get my coffee and going about my day, and I heard the radio report about what happened in Sandy Hook, it was like, enough. This is enough. I can't watch this just happen anymore. So that's when I decided that something's got to be done. And looking around trying to find out, well, what can I do? How can I get involved in trying to do something about this? And there was nothing there. There was absolutely nothing there. So something had to be done. So that's when I put the advertisement in the paper, and you know the rest of the story there. So I want to go on a little bit what John was talking about with his nonviolent work and how this ties into what we're trying to do on this, December 14th. You know, this doesn't happen overnight. What John's talking about doesn't happen overnight. It's got to happen from what he was talking about, a grassroots level. But at that grassroots level is an increasing awareness of that something is wrong. So here we live in a society where anyone can go ahead and pull the trigger and create so much change and radical, tragic change in a matter of an instant, and we've seen it over and over and over and over again. So we have to come to some kind of awareness that we can do this, and the only way we can do this is as a community. That's the only way I could see that. When you're looking at something like the incident at Sandy Hook, and you're looking 2 years down the road, and you see all these people that have been killed since then, 92 school shootings since then, what is going wrong with our society that this happens, that this is going on? So here we are 2 years later, and we want to raise awareness that we as a community can do something that would make this a better place to live.
Now, one of the things that's going to happen on December 14th is there's a promise, a pledge that people can read?
Well, what we want to do is come together as a community and promise to do something. I want to read this promise if I can.
Yeah, please.
As a community, we want to come together and we want to say this out loud at the event. I promise to work for the day when no child is killed or injured by a gun. I promise to bring down the walls which separate us so we can talk civilly and know each other by name. I promise to work together for a better way, a creative solution for a safer world. Because too many people have died. Not one more death. Not a child, not a youth, not a woman or a man. Every life is precious, and the price of gun violence is far too high. I promise to work for this day. I promise. So that we're going to read that at the event, and I'm urging everyone to come to that event, because we all want to work on this together. We all want to be on the same page.
Is there going to be anything fun?
It's going to be a lot. There's going to be a lot of fun. We have Native American hoop dancers that are going to be at the event. This is a group of kids from the Pewaukee Pueblo, so they're going to be dancing. We have hip hop artists that are going to be dancing at the event. Also, a group from Warehouse 21. We have music happening at the event. There's a fellow that wrote a song for the promise, and he'll be performing that. We have other musicians that are going to be performing there. We even have a choir that's going to be at the event, and that is a high school choir from Española will be performing at the event also. So afterwards we're going to have food. We want people to stick around. We want people to talk to each other and form a network to see if we can work together.
Very, very important and very interesting. So once again, Sunday at El Museo Cultural from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. Now, let's talk a little bit more about this whole process, John Deere, about organizing for nonviolence. I mean, this is so clearly your calling and your life's work. It's not everybody's calling and life's work. And for those for whom it isn't, but they still want to support it, but they're not about to go get arrested or do nonviolence trainings or become martyrs and things like that. What's the role of ordinary people?
Well, thank you. Not everybody has to be an activist or organizer or get arrested, though if people are interested, they can
talk to you.
I just was arrested protesting at the White House against the U.S. military action in Iraq, which I think will only make things worse. Based on what the church leaders there are saying and all.
Yeah.
But I do think everybody has to take nonviolence training. I do think everybody has to become nonviolent. I think every school and church in the planet, and religious community should be training and teaching nonviolence.
Now, do you think some of the bullying work, anti-bullying
yes,
work,
yes, it's all the same. Yeah. It's all the same. But it's anti-bullying for five-year-old boys, but also for 60-year-old generals who are bullying each other. Like, it doesn't work in school for kids, and this isn't brain surgery. And the world, it doesn't work in the world. And in the end, after we kill tens of thousands of people, we all sit down at the table and we make peace. Well, we need to learn to do that now and put our $1 trillion into global nonviolent conflict resolution. Paul is talking about that, doing it locally here in New Mexico. So now, you know, kids aren't killed, and we haven't even really talked about bullying. But we live in the shadow of Los Alamos, which makes this really hard. But you remember, I love this promise, Paul.
I mean, the Los Alamos, yes, they have been making nuclear weapons for over 50 years. I mean,
we've come 28 times.
They've also done plenty of other things. I mean,
I want to get rid of nuclear weapons, period. And so we could talk more about Los Alamos. But I love this promise. I promise to work for the day when no child is killed or injured by a gun. I think that's everybody needs to be part of that. You are asking for the ordinary person, because violence is touching all of us. You know, it's affecting all of us, and it's getting worse. It's not getting better. Paul is saying we'll only get better when everybody takes responsibility. That's why I'm so moved by his story. He's telling me he's a landscape contractor. Sandy Hook happens. He decides to organize something. Well, maybe not everybody has to organize something, but everybody's got to be aware and learn and do their part. This event, December 14th, is really important to doing that. Hey, Mary Charlotte, did I ever give you that quote from the poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay? Do you like her? Remember her?
Yeah. What?
One of her poems has the first sentence is, "I shall die, but that is all I shall do for death." I love that. You know, we don't want to be spending our lives continuing the big business of death in the world, or bringing death, that somehow we had a gun in our house and then our child used it. And everybody's got to reflect on that. We want our lives to help bring life and life to the full for every human being everywhere. That's all I'm talking about. And nonviolence is a way and a methodology through King and Gandhi to do that.
It's interesting that you mention King and Gandhi over and over, and you don't mention the Bible as much.
Well, I'm convinced, as Gandhi said, that Jesus was the greatest person of nonviolence in the history of the world. But then poor Gandhi went on to say, the only people on the whole planet who don't know that Jesus was nonviolent are Christians. I've said that on the show before, but I could talk at length about that, but then I'll start preaching and nobody wants that, Mary Charlotte. But let me tell you about my campaign nonviolence project. Okay. Do I have a second to add about that? Yeah, so my friends and I organized campaignnonviolence.org. In effect, it's part of what Paul's doing. And we organized 238 demonstrations across the country in the week of September 21st, International Peace Day, 3 months ago. Every state, every major city, and what's historic is we were connecting the dots. So in Wilmington, Delaware, hundreds of people marched through the inner cities against gun violence and police violence and poverty, but also saying we don't want to be killing kids in Afghanistan with drones, and we don't want nuclear weapons. We need that money to create a nonviolent Wilmington, Delaware. It's so fantastic, and people should look it up on the website, campaignnonviolence.org. Going to do it again next September. We're going to have a national conference about it here August 7th and 8th in Santa Fe. I'm organizing it at the Hilton.
And we'll hear from you around that time.
Yes. and I see this event on December 14th a part of this new grassroots movement of nonviolence. And I thank you, Paul, for all the great work you've done.
Thank you.
Father John Deere is an author, peace activist, and lecturer. He's with the Diocese of Monterey, California. Paul Schmidt is founder of New Mexicans for Gun Safety. And once again, December 14th, El Museo Cultural, 1 to 4 p.m., remembering December 14th. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.